This is LA Podcast. How are you feeling, Scott?
I'm feeling much better, thank you for asking.
You had the flu.
I had the flu, the summer.
The old May flu.
Summertime flu. Yeah. I don't know. But whatever it was, it eventually passed.
You sound fine.
It sounds fake.
It sounds like a lie.
Well, I mean, so basically after our last episode came out, I was then bedridden for several days. And
yeah,
then
you were scared because we said that the president of USC should be fired, should be washed out to sea.
Right.
And you were scared of repercussions.
Yeah,
you didn't actually want to end anybody's career.
Yeah, I kind of actually spent all day not in bed but under my bed, just worried about the damaging consequences of my actions.
Yeah.
And then it turned out that was all justified. I came out from under my bed on Wednesday.
You came out a hero.
I came out from under my bed and I found that there was a total firestorm brewing on the USC campus that did culminate with university president Max Nikias being terminated on Friday by the Board of Trustees. So
it happened way faster than I thought it would.
Yeah, I mean, when they originally came out, the big thing they were saying was he has our full support. It was like, you know, we want to make sure everybody knows that we've heard their concerns. This is the Board of Trustees, but we strongly support the president and he has our full confidence. And then Tuesday, faculty posted an open letter that had 200 faculty signatories calling for Nikias to be let go and basically saying that the staff and the professors at USC had no confidence in his ability to lead them through this crisis. A similar petition was being circulated by the students on campus that I think ultimately gained about 4,000 to 5,000 signatures.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So this really, throughout the course of the week, both the faculty and students on campus pushed and pushed, and they were the ones that made this happen. The trustees, who are comprised of extremely rich people, CEOs of companies, Steven Spielberg is on there. You've got the Annenbergs. They're just a top to bottom list of some really wealthy power players in LA's business community were not in the slightest inclined to make this decision until it became forced upon them by the university
and
community.
Because they like Nikias.
Right.
And they like Nikias because
he is raised a powerhouse fundraiser.
He's
certainly has appeared to be keyed into, I guess, what it is that makes his wealthy alumni base want to give. I don't know. He has, I don't know what the right word for this is, but he has privileged a sort of view of USC that is like, we're going to take this school from being just a private school in a wealthy city to being an extremely elite school on a national level.
Yeah.
So
there's been a big focus on those rankings, those U.S. News rankings. And
right.
They really have climbed. They're like number, I think they're tied with UCLA now. It's like they're tied at 20 or something like that.
So, yeah. So there's been an extreme drift upwards in the national consciousness about what it means to go to USC. But unfortunately, that has coincided with a remarkable just inability and lack of desire by Nikias and everybody, I would say, in that administration with wanting to deal with major issues that are occurring on campus. So here we are today, there are 20-something lawsuits currently filed against the university. Well, you brought up Michigan State last week, and it seems like the precedent has been set there that this is going to be this is going to be a long, drawn out process, and a lot of people want answers to how this could happen for so long without any real ramifications.
Do you think it went into the Board of Trustees decision that by firing their president, that gives them some level of accountability in legal cases? It's like sort of an admission of guilt, essentially, in what I assume are going to be a huge number of probably very expensive lawsuits. Michigan State had to pay $350 million, something like that.
I think it actually really went huge. Yeah, it went up to $500 million. Yeah.
And this is three. I think right now we have 300 plus students.
Yep.
Who have complained about George Tyndall, the gynecologist who committed sexual assault and rape on like hundreds and hundreds of students, right. Allegedly.
But now you have also, I mean, as this has grown and grown, we also have women writing into the LA Times. There's a great and really just completely chilling op-ed the other day from a woman who was a USC student and had been in Tyndall's care when she was in her 20s, and now she's like, okay, it's 15 years later and I'm actually a healthcare professional. So yeah. I thought everything that he did to me at the time that I thought was weird and painful, now I know, you know, with the full scope of my knowledge, that was in no way either necessary or valid as a medical practice. So there's going to be a lot that comes out of this. And I think you're right. I think that is the Board of Trustees trying to say, you know, not the buck stops with me, but the buck stopped already over there with Nikias. And I think you see that so often in these cases where there's just a desire to create some kind of indemnity where you're saying, I was not directly responsible for this. I can't see it really playing out that way. This is an institutional lapse that is almost, I wish I could say unprecedented, but since we do have the Larry Nassar thing, it's clearly not unprecedented, but it does not bode well for any of them.
The other thing I'm curious about is, you know, 200 faculty members signed the petition, but I want to know who didn't sign. and I'm sure they're all talking about it in like the, you know, whatever the equivalent of the teacher's lounge is for USC.
Right.
I'm sure they're all saying like, oh, well, we gave him the petition and he didn't sign. And he sent it back with kind of a stern note about how he wasn't interested in getting involved in our political campaign. I'm sure that's like the talk of the USC teachers lounge right now.
Actually, so that was the first day. Now by Friday it had risen to 500 signatures. So they're still circulating it, I guess. They were up until the point that it was announced that he was going to resign.
Okay, so some people got it and were like, I'll pass on this one. I don't want to make waves in case he doesn't get fired.
Right.
I've like, you know, hung out with this guy before. And then the thing gets released with 200 names on it. And then they start getting emails being like, hey, notice your name wasn't on the petition.
Yep.
And then people start signing. Wow.
Yep. So
cool.
Yeah, it's a mess. Tyndall, for his
peer
part,
pressure works,
made a kind of curious decision to send a letter to the LA Times also that they said that they received on Thursday, so prior to Nikias being let go, but basically just again denying all of the accusations against him, warning clinicians who conduct pelvic exams that they should always have a chaperone present, which I mean doesn't sound like a terrible idea, but the reason why he said that they should do that is because, quote, patients sometimes fabricate stories.
Oh, so, and he did have a chaperone present for a lot of his exams, and a lot of the chaperones said that he acted inappropriately.
Right.
He also did the germaphobe defense, which is a familiar one now in our politics.
Yeah.
That he said that he doesn't even like shaking hands with people. So why would he give a gynecological exam without gloves?
Right. Yeah. He doesn't even like touching a doorknob with his bare skin. So clearly, how could he do any of this? So
Is there like a clock on your end?
Yes. Hold on a second.
It's giving a nice rhythm my podcasting. I feel like I'm in the pocket.
Is it so loud? I can't even hear it anymore.
So, yeah. So, Scott and I are still in separate place. I'm still in Italy. I'm in a different bathroom. A different Italian bathroom.
And I'm in my same bedroom, but with a different clock.
This bathroom is pitch dark. Because if you turn the light on, there's a vent.
You hear that?
Yeah, I hear it.
Yeah. So there can't be, it has to be dark. The floor is very wet because my wife took a shower 5 seconds before I came in here.
So it's dark and
humid.
This
one is definitely echoier than the last bathroom, but we still have. That's the bidet.
I really like
that. One sounds a lot stronger than the last one. I haven't used any of them because they don't seem like they would be load bearing. I don't even know if you're supposed to like sit all the way down on them. They're so small.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you hover.
You might hover. It really, but I.
You'll never know. Until
it doesn't seem
try.
Like it's such a simple machine, but it looks like it's very complex to use. We talked about doing a voter guide. I had these big ideas about like, oh, we'll do our voter guide. Like we'll walk everyone through the whole like election for like maybe not the state ones but all like the local elections. It's too much.
It's
there's
a lot.
Too many, and it would be so boring. So many of them are really really boring. I mean, I don't have time to even like research all of these.
We could go through like 10 minutes worth of state senators that are running unopposed, probably. And then just who wants to? I guess it's good to know why they're running unopposed, but I guess figure that out on your own.
So we're going to pick out a few. I have focused on probably the most boring stuff that really no one has. I mean, but we'll get to that in a second. what are some races that you want to highlight in the election, which is on June 5th?
June 5th, yep. So it's going to be a week from Tuesday. I think to start with, we have a couple of, since we've been following the special elections, that have largely resulted from misconduct by elected officials this year. Mm-hmm. There are some of those runoffs that are covering the remainder of the year, essentially. So we have four separate elections that are just runoffs for the remainder of 2018. Everybody in these districts is going to be simultaneously voting for a representative for 2018 and also for a representative that's going to take over in 2019. So,
but the 2019 one is a primary, right?
That's correct. Yes, you're right. The 2019 election, that
disaster.
Is a primary.
So,
yes.
Clusterfuck.
You'll vote for... Once for your representative for this year, once in the primary for your representative for next year, and then the general is going to be later in the year. But those are Senate District 32. We'll come back to this one in a second because this is the one that's Tony Mendoza in Southeast LA County. We have Assembly District 39. That's Northeast San Fernando Valley, Luis Rivas and Ricardo Benitez taking over for Raul Bocanegra. We have Assembly District 45. That's Jesse Gabriel, the lawyer, and Justin Clark, Republican college student.
19-year-old whiz kid Republican.
C-son. Yeah. So then we
works at an ice cream shop.
Yeah. So to go back to Senate District 32, just briefly, Tony Mendoza has been accused of sexual harassment and actually did resign from his position under essentially threat of being expelled from the Senate by Kevin DeLeon. He was extremely chafed about being
very chafed
about the thought of being expelled, and then immediately came back and said he was going to run for his seat again. He is doing
as that. He was resigning, basically.
As he was resigning,
said that he's not going anywhere.
I feel like this must be unprecedented.
Probably. I'll bet it happened in like what in like the 1880s or something.
To resign and then say, where, like, "No, some, wait,
someone
I
in the
my
I'll
term.
Bet someone I'll bet someone in the assembly murdered somebody else and had to resign for that, and then murdered the person running against them."
Okay, that's true. That could totally have happened. So Tony Mendoza has 11 people running for his seat now. He is running again because he thinks that essentially nobody in his district cares about this, and this was a total power play by the Senate leadership. So
do you know what it says for him on the ballot? Does it say former assemblyman?
Public school teacher.
What?
Yeah.
Public school teacher. God. Just running it back. Just starting from scratch.
He's day one Tony. So
okay,
yeah, he's got a whole host of opposition here, and the interesting thing is there are a number of women that are running to replace him in this seat, but so we have 4 female candidates and then 7 male candidates. This is being actually watched pretty closely by political consultants in the state, though, because they are also trying to gauge how much do Me Too accusations, how much do sexual harassment claims actually matter to the public, to the voting public? So they're kind of looking to see if Tony Mendoza actually wins, or if he's actually able to hold on to this seat. They're looking at changing essentially the way that they respond to these claims going forward.
I mean, the recent precedent for something like this, someone who was like in trouble running for office who did pretty well, that I can think of is Paul Tanaka, who was under investigation by the FBI, was basically in the process of going to jail, which he ultimately did.
Yeah.
As deputy sheriff or whatever he was. And he ran for sheriff at the same time as he was being investigated, I think, is kind of to be like, why would I be so confident enough to run for sheriff if I did anything wrong? But he made it to the runoff. He finished second in the voting, I think, kind of by a lot. I think Tony Mendoza is going to make the runoff for sure.
Right. It's hard to imagine him not making the runoff. Which says a lot about the ability to actually turn out voters once you have the office. Also says a lot about just generally the low voter turnout that we expect to see in all of these races. So it's hard to say. For the part of the people that are running against him, a lot of them have said that they think it's kind of a cynical move on his part that Tony Mendoza is trying to basically deflate people that might turn out to vote against him. I don't know if I buy that, because if I saw he was running in my district, I would say, I don't want him to be my representative. I would show up. But, yeah.
Because, I mean, the accusations against him, there are lots of women who complained about him, correct?
Yes. Yeah, it really depends. There are some politicians from Southeast LA that are running against him. Vanessa Delgado, mayor of Commerce, and Bob Archuleta, mayor of Montebello. Those are, of course, relatively unknown politicians outside of their respective cities, but
which are very small.
But you never know. I imagine he will be at the very least in the runoff and possibly will win outright.
Okay, that's a fun one. Anything else?
Not really. What do you have?
I wanted to talk about the Board of Equalization but I really only want to talk about it for 1 second because it is so stupid. The Board of Equalization is a bad name for the state board that's responsible for tax collection.
Right.
There's it's a 5-member board for the entire state, which is that's not enough. They collect $60 billion in taxes, or they did until Jerry Brown basically gutted the board last year. So the Board of Equalization pretty much no longer exists because the board was so corrupt, so incredibly scandal-ridden,
right,
and gross. They misplaced like $350 million, or they put it in the wrong accounts. They had no like basically accounting practices whatsoever. There was another scandal where in 2016, Rob Lowe had a case with the Board of Equalization, and something about how much income taxes he would have to pay on the house in Santa Barbara he sold or something. And the head of the Board of Equalization, Jerome Horton, asked him, according to Rob Lowe, if he Jewed down the contractors that he used on his home.
Oh, my God.
Very, very bad. So this is according to Rubla. So now the Board of Equalization used to have 4,800 workers. Now it has 400. Jerry Brown created a whole new department for tax collection. So when you see that on the ballot, just know that it is pretty much no longer exists.
Right.
But the one of the races is still pretty funny. I think for District 3, there are two races in LA, and one of them is District 3 that a guy named Scott Zvonkin is the front runner for, who is known as he's on the community college board, and he's known for screaming all the time. This is a thing that has dogged him. He used to be in like the some school district, I think in the Valley, and then on the community college district, he just screams at everyone in these closed door meetings. Everyone, this is like the book on him. He just screams constantly. He'll be eating and he'll scream and like food will fly out of his mouth. But he really, really, I've gotten tons of mailers for Scott Zvonkin for State Board of Equalization. So he really wants this thing. I really want to talk about the judges. So, you know, if you've ever voted in LA, you know you have to vote on all these fucking judges. This is like the most confusing thing to everyone about, like, how do I, you know, these are, there's so many of them.
It's just a list of names. It's like, who are any of these people?
Yes. And it'll say, like, you're used to, I think the rules changed on this, but they would say, like, gang violence attorney,
right,
or homicide, or child molestation attorney. And what those all were just prosecutors. And they would just choose the nastiest sounding crime to say that they were, there's no such thing as a child molestation attorney. That doesn't exist.
Right.
That means that you are a prosecutor. But it's that apparently is what sounded good on the ballot.
That just makes me think back to like writing my resume. I'm like, what is that thing that I did for 5% of my time that sounds
Scott Frazier, child molestation disliker. but I think the rules change now where they've kind of cracked down on what you can say you are. But you still have to vote on it. So this is for the California Superior Court for Los Angeles. The Los Angeles Superior Court. There are 489 judges in the Los Angeles Superior Court. They see 2.7 million cases a year. It is the largest single trial court in the United States.
Wow.
And I think mostly what people do when they're evaluating the judges is they look at the Los Angeles County Bar Association does like a rating for all of them where they say who's qualified and who's not qualified. Have you seen that before?
Yeah.
And the LA Times does do endorsements, but pretty much all of these endorsements that I've seen don't really think of the position of the position of judge as political at all.
Yeah.
It's just going off of like how many, what level of cases an attorney has tried. They'll say, oh, this person has tried like so all these murders. This, right. They've had 50 murders,
right,
that they've tried. Like they're qualified to do this. They've been in front of a judge all these times. But it doesn't seem to weigh in on somebody's politics as being something that could influence their decision making as a judge. And I think we know now basically that like judges are political
right.
actors, like basically everyone else in public life. We hear about judges all over the country that are notorious for being much harder on people of color who go up against them.
There was that one in the news recently. That was over in Texas, where it was like a judge who made his children sign contracts saying they would marry white people in order to get some of their inheritance. They would be out of the inheritance if they married outside of the white race.
Yeah. And if someone like that, if you were just going by the Bar Association rankings, and if he'd just like been in the court a lot as a prosecutor or whatever, if they probably put him as qualified. They don't take that stuff into account, and it is actually very relevant when these people are trying cases, are overseeing cases. So the Times also does endorsements for all of these judge races, and I think most people, I know what I would usually do is just go with whatever the Times said about these judges, but I wanted to go through their endorsements and basically spend a lot of time just like Googling the judges to see what I could find about some of them. I went through, there are 11 races that people can vote on this year. One in seat four, the LA Times endorsement was to a guy named Alfred Coletta, who is a district attorney. He's a prosecutor. And it says, the Times endorsement says, not every prosecutor would necessarily make a good judge, but Coletta is one who would probably be excellent. And everyone talks about how he specifically has tried so many murders, like, you know, just like tons of murders.
Right.
I don't care how many murders a prosecutor has tried. I want to know how many potentially innocent people they have browbeaten into taking a plea deal.
Yes.
How many police departments have they colluded with to hide evidence? Coletta's endorsed by practically every policeman's union in the county. Is that good?
Yeah. Where is the interrogation of what that endorsement actually means?
Yes. There's no defendants union. I don't know. Like I don't know what the other side is. His opponent is a woman named Veronica Sauceda. She was a nonprofit public interest lawyer, and she was most recently a Superior Court commissioner, which I didn't really know what that was, but it means that she actually has basically filled in as a judge on like family law cases and misdemeanors cases and stuff like that. Is that not good experience? You have to have prosecuted murders in order to be a judge. I don't really understand how we value experience for
is there
this
like
important position. I guess,
is there a credible reason to think that if you have not personally tried a murder case that your judgment would be insufficient in one of those cases? Is that what the, I don't know, where does that come from?
Well, in another one of these races, there's so many good races in here. But in the Times endorsement for a woman named Holly Hancock in Office 60, so she's a public defender, Holly Hancock,
right.
And the Times did endorse her, but she's going to appear on the ballot as attorney at law. Do you know why that is? They say
why?
Because just according to lore, if you put yourself down as a public defender, people won't vote for you.
What? Because they just assume that you're not good. Is that?
I think it's considered maybe like a lower class position, and maybe that you would be too soft on defendants.
That is really remarkable. I guess intuitively I can see it's like the same sort of thing where if you need a defense lawyer, the public defender is the last resort, not, you know, necessarily.
Sure.
But still,
and no,
that does...
And no, like, upscale defense lawyer, for the most part, really wants to be a judge. If you're, like, making tons of money as a defense lawyer, why do you want to be a judge?
Right.
You know?
That's true.
This is a really good one. Seat 16, the Times endorsed this woman, Sydney Michelle. This is another pronunciation thing. Her name is spelled S-Y-D-N-E. Last name, M-I-C-H-E-L. Sydney Michelle.
I think we have to flip it and go Sydney Michael, don't we?
Sydney Michael. I think you're right.
Haunted by our failure.
Michelle is a seasoned Redondo Beach prosecutor who has the presence to command a courtroom. Because in all of these times that Dorsey would say, like, talk about their, like, just like their bearing and the way they carry themselves.
Right.
Because as a judge, it's very important that you have to be able to, like, sit in a cool,
you have to be like lordly,
tough way, yeah,
whatever.
presence to command a courtroom while still respecting the lawyers appearing before her. And Diana Wagman at the Times wrote a column on this race because she, I guess, knows someone running in it. But she wanted to do like research on the race before she made her decision. And what she found was that Sidney Michael, I guess apparently she was in the movie. She was an actress, I guess, and she was in Carrie.
What? Yep.
When she was a kid. And then she found out that her husband is an NRA attorney, a litigator. And she was like, that's kind of weird, but she didn't want to judge the husband, judge her for what her husband's job. But then she saw at calguns.net, the home for California firearms enthusiasts, she found a big endorsement post saying, don't forget to vote for Sidney Michel. And she also found that Sidney Michel's son's name is Colt and their dog's name is Heston.
Huh. So she just names her dogs after guns and people who like guns?
Yes. Well, no, the son is a gun. The son is named son Colt. Is a gun. The dog is named after a person who likes guns. Yes.
Got it.
So this one is the best. Seat 20, the Times endorsed Wendy Siegel. And this is how they endorsed her. They said, this especially bitter race pits two prosecutors against each other and seemingly has roiled various factions within the district attorney's office. So you read that and you're like, oh, this is fucked up. Some real shit is going down in this race. And it is insane. So there are two main contestants in the race for seat 20, Marianne Escalante and Wendy Siegel. And they used to be best friends. Okay.
Uh-oh.
They were like known as like buddy. I think they went to college together.
I am primed for some serious drama.
So
right now.
It began, their falling out began when Wendy Siegel took a picture of somebody's shoes in the courtroom. Apparently somebody was wearing, the article I read about this is in the Metropolitan News Enterprise. Please look up this article. It's by Roger Grace. This is so good. Wendy Siegel, who the Times endorsed, took a picture of someone else's shoes. Apparently someone was wearing sock shoes in the courtroom.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what that means. I guess it's maybe those like Vibram, like five
the,
fingers.
Like, toe socks,
yes.
Or toe shoes.
And Wendy Siegel took a picture of the shoes and posted it to Facebook and said, is this proper courtroom attire? As like a joke. I don't know if Marriott Escalante was the person wearing the sock shoes. That's not said in the article. But apparently this post was kind of the beginning of the end.
It was all downhill.
It was downhill from there. So
wow.
What happened after that, this was the big thing that happened afterwards. In June of 2016, 20 women from Los Angeles, district attorneys, both of these women are prosecutors. So a bunch of district attorneys, judges, and defense lawyers all went to New York City to celebrate the 50th birthday of a Superior Court judge.
Okay.
And a criminal defense lawyer sent them, they're all like partying in this hotel room, and a criminal defense lawyer sent them a bottle of wine. And I guess some judges were there, and Wendy Siegel, who the Times endorsed, apparently, allegedly, reported the judges for not reporting the bottle of wine as a gift.
Wow.
And so I think now all these other, Marianne Escalante and all Wendy Siegel's former friends are mad at her for narking.
Yeah, basically.
On their hotel party. What's crazy to me is like, you can get in trouble for taking a bottle of wine from a defense lawyer as a judge, But you can't get in trouble for having prosecutors and defense lawyers fly to New York for your birthday party?
That does seem a little bit strange.
Wouldn't you be upset if you were like being defended by some lawyer and you found out that the prosecutor in your case went to the 50th birthday party of the judge in New York and your defense lawyer was not invited?
Yeah, that I feel like that would be bad. I guess you would probably never find that out, and it would just kind of just suck for you.
Yes.
In the background. But that's, so she is getting their endorsement, though. She's getting the Times endorsement.
She is getting the Times endorsement. But apparently, so it seems like Marian Escalante, some people think, is running in this election only because Wendy Siegel is running, and she hates Wendy Siegel so much for the shoe photo and the wine narking that she, two days after Wendy Siegel announced that she was running in the same seat. There is also a big controversy over Wendy Siegel thinks that Marian Escalante stole her Facebook friend list and friended all of her Facebook friends to like send them messages about her campaign, about Marian Escalante's campaign.
Wendy Siegel, good lawyer, bad friend. This is like the ultimate wine mom story.
I know. Some, it is very, it's some very petty stuff going on. For this very important, this person is going to, whoever wins this position is going to condemn probably some people to life imprisonment, maybe death. Some other good ones. So Office 71, this is insane. The Times endorsed a guy named David Berger. They said he has a reputation for sharp-witted candor and a sometimes supercilious attitude. It's ridiculous how they write about these people. And it said, which he displayed as a candidate for Los Angeles City Attorney and later on a website that critiqued various candidates and commented on news events. And I was like, oh, that's weird. I kind of want to look at this website. Apparently, it's a blog called Los Angeles Dragnet that he wrote under the name Joe Friday for like 8 years. He posts all
that is bonkers.
The time. All the time. And so I'm like, I'm reading this entire blog. I'm in Italy with my family. And they're like, are you coming? We're all going out to dinner together. Are you like, are you coming? And we're going to this nice place. No, mom. I have to read this judge's blog. He's not a judge. He's a candidate for judge. He was endorsed by the Times.
Listen, Joe Friday has incredibly important information for you.
So this is what I found from reading only like 50 posts. He,
did you say only 50?
Well, it's out of like 50,000.
Okay.
So he used to be, I did not find this out from the blog, but he used to be a prosecutor for the sheriff's office in Lancaster, and he really pushed an effort in Lancaster to take a 12 block square area of the city and make it so people on probation or parole could not go there.
Whoa.
So if you were found in a part of Lancaster and you were on parole or probation, you would be in violation of your probation or parole.
Wow.
He's pretty tough. He is extremely anti-weed. He talks about in the blog a lot about how marijuana messes up your brain. He calls former city councilman Ed Reyes El Stupido a lot.
What the fuck?
Which I had spent some time researching. I was like, is that a play on some existing nickname for Ed Reyes that would make that like possibly okay? No, he calls him El Stupido and sometimes he calls him El Pequeño.
Okay. So it gets just worse.
Some truly bizarre shit in this blog that he posts on every single day. And he posts on race. He's run for office for this judgeship before, and he posts on those races, and he talks about himself in the third person, sometimes without mentioning that he is the person writing the blog.
That's crazy.
Crazy. And the Times knows this. They say, they talks about that he's critique various candidates and commented on news events, and it says, none of this gives us pause.
What? That's crazy. The quote. None of this gives us pause.
As they endorse him. They also endorse in Office 63 a guy named Malcolm Mackey. And I look up Malcolm Mackey and he is 88 years old.
So what you're telling me basically is that the Times is as ill-equipped to make these kind of endorsements as anybody else, it sounds like.
I think they are going off. I mean, I don't know how much research. I'm not going to say that they don't do any research. But I think they're going off of this prevailing idea of what qualifies someone to be a judge, which is just...
Oh, that's what I mean. Yeah. That's what I mean. It sounds like they've done their research. It just sounds like, what do you do once you've collected all this information about these candidates? How do you know that anything that they're doing is going... There are definitely things that are disqualifying. I still don't know what the qualifying things are, really. Public interest work, that sounds good.
It sounds good to me. I think being a Superior Court commissioner, someone who has actually like presided over a lot of cases, if they have done a good job at that, then they should probably be a higher level judge. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's so many prosecutors. I didn't even get a chance to go all through these things, but so many of the other people are prosecutors. A job that basically demands that you...
Yep.
Ruin as many lives as possible. There's just a like
that is the job.
Yes,
there's that that thing in the Thin Blue Line where they talk about how the prosecutor in that specific case, the prosecutors would say that any prosecutor can convict a guilty man. It takes a great prosecutor to convict an innocent man.
Yeah.
Or whatever. You know, that kind of shit.
They all work under, for the most part, Jackie Lacey,
who is not a progressive.
No, she's not. She's like maybe the cop friendliest prosecutor in the country. Not a single officer who has killed an unarmed person has been prosecuted in her office.
Even when the police chief recommended that should happen.
Which should never happen. The fact that the police chief would say this person should go on trial for murder, essentially, or manslaughter, and the city attorney's office opted not to do that. At what point does that trickle down to the prosecutors that work under her?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it has to.
So that seems like a very long length for an episode. Well, give me another idea for music. You did a good job last time.
Oh, damn. I don't really... Oh, you know, Stacey Dash is on the ballot. Could we maybe get, like... Is there a ska song from Clueless that we want?
Oh, that's good. That's a really good one. Is she on the ballot? I thought she quit.
Yeah, she quit. She's one of those who quit, but too late to get her name off the ballot.
Great.
Oh, man, we should have talked about that race. She's still on the ballot. So is Asia Brown, who is only running to spite Stacey Dash. But neither of them is running.
Oh, that rules. That's cool. Thank you for listening to LA Podcast. We will be back next week. Bye.
Hello?